Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you enjoy this podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, be sure to check out our other paranormal podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's episodes of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, The House in Between, a conversation with John Villard. John Villard would spend much of his childhood wondering where the strange whispers he heard were coming from. Eventually, he'd get validation for his paranormal experiences by capturing the dead's voice on tape. This would lead him on a journey to show the rest of the world that we are not alone in the living realm. This would lead him to investigate what would become known as the House in Between, a house that would hold more spirits than anyone could understand.
Yeah, so, you know, what really got me into the paranormal, I was about 10 or 11 years old. So like you said, I was a younger child. My grandparents lived in a small town in Mississippi called Brookhaven, Mississippi, and not necessarily known for Victorian houses or mansions or anything like that. But there were a few very old houses, late 1800s. And my grandfather actually owned a couple junkyards, and he also did estate sale stuff as well. And I remember going with him several times to different houses and places. And there was two houses in that town that I remember going into doing an estate sale. And I would see figures, like shadow figures, across the wall, up the stairs. And I would hear people murmuring and whispering when it was just me and my grandfather inside the house. Sometimes he'd be outside loading stuff and I was inside and I would just hear talking. And that kind of resonated with me. And I never told anybody. I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell my grandfather because I just figured it was my imagination and they would just laugh it off anyway. And going forward the next few years, going to high school and whatnot, there would be random places that I would go to, whether it was somebody's house or just, you know, just random places that I would get vertigo where I got real dizzy. And again, I would hear whispers and it just, it always kind of just brought me back to my childhood experience in Brookhaven. So I started doing research on the paranormal. This is probably 2006, 2007, and just kind of looking about, you know, looking up haunted places, supernatural, the theories behind why something may be haunted, and then obviously locations that are, you know, supposedly haunted. So 2007, 2008, I decided to take myself and two friends to King's Tavern, which is in Natchez, Mississippi. Which is a late 1700s building, very, very famous. Ghost Adventures have been there. John Zaffis has done something there. So what's neat is I knew that this place had a long history of being active and haunted. So I wanted to validate what I experienced over the last few years as a child and try to capture something. And we went in not knowing anything about the paranormal, supernatural. And the two people who came with me, they just tagged along because they were friends. So we went in with some very low-key equipment, and we had the little tape recorder, you know, little tapes you used to use for your answering machine.
Sure.
That's a little small. Yeah. So we had some analog stuff, some digital stuff, and we were just kind of poking around. And we went into the investigation the wrong way. I wanted anything to happen. Every creak, every noise, I was like, could that be something? So we were in there for several hours and didn't really get any activity. And lo and behold, about, I would say, the last hour and a half, 2 hours of that investigation that night, we had a door swing wide open and scared the hell out of us. And once we captured it, it was just that aha moment for me. And it validated that what I experienced as a child, it wasn't just my imagination, that there's maybe something actually to this in this field. So that became my obsession with the paranormal, you know, really just documenting evidence and trying to understand the why for the what. And audio has always been a big thing for me because, you know, there's a lot of skeptics in the field and in the world, and that's a good thing. It keeps us honest to what we do. But even if you have a skeptic who does not believe in the supernatural, the paranormal, and you're capturing some really clean, crisp audio that's intelligent, full sentences, you know, you have to have a conversation with those people. If it's not fake, what is it? So that's always been something that intrigued me, and it's some of the best things that we can capture in the field, obviously, besides something that's full body or an object moving. But, you know, and your vocal tone is unique to yourself, so it's just like your fingerprints. None of everybody's fingerprints are the same. That's why they fingerprint you if you get arrested. Your vocal tone is very similar. So it's interesting to see EVP software. You know, we've actually got recordings of a guy who lived in a house who passed away, and we saw his vocal tone pattern from a recording, and we put an EVP pattern up there. It is pretty similar. It's pretty neat to go into that side of the audio and the EVP. So you try to get into as much scientific stuff as you can. But jumping back to King's Tavern, once I captured that first EVP, it really just set me on the trajectory that I wanted to be able to document authentic, clean evidence and let people be able to listen to it. Because I knew a lot of people who were into the paranormal, but they were never going to invest the kind of time that it takes to do it correctly. So it's just one of those things. And this is not a knock to anybody who does this, but you know, when groups put a video up of them investigating some mansion and it's an hour and 20 minute video, well, nobody's going to watch it. Okay. Cause nobody wants to watch you bumble around in the dark for an hour and maybe a light goes off for you. You know, it's just, that's a long process. And that's why, you know, it takes a quality show like Ghost Nation or Ghost Adventures. And usually if they do a location, they're filming for 3 or 4 days, sometimes a week, and it's condensed to 45 minutes. So I always tell people, you know, I love paranormal. I love this field, but it is not as sexy as it seems like on TV.
No, I mean, there's a lot more that goes into production than people will go, "Whoa, it's overproduced." It's like, well, they had to make something out of their 3 days of footage that would be viewable. Yeah. So, I mean, does it seem condensed and on top of each other? Yes, but that's how you make television. So for you, when we're talking about audio versus visual things that people capture or you capture, what to you, this is just a personal question, what's more convincing to you when you see evidence? What draws you to it as more valid than the other, audio versus visual?
That's a great question. And I'm an audio guy, so I lean towards audio just because, you know, something made an imprint on that recording, right? So like that had to be something. Now, whether it's a parallel universe, you want to get in that topic, or whether it's residual, whether it's an intelligent haunting, you know, we've gotten EVPs of me walking down a stairwell and it says John's walking down. So like there's different things that are specifically calling your name and directly responding to what you're doing in the moment. And if it's not fake, you know, again, you have to have that conversation. So I guess for me, I look at it as the biggest skeptic in the world. If I bring them this evidence, they're going to give me pushback. But what's the best thing that I can sit down and have a conversation with, whether it's going to make them scratch their head? And obviously on the flip side, audio is great. But if you can capture physical evidence, I mean, it's like the Holy Grail. Obviously, if you have a full body apparition or manifestation, or if you watch The House in Between, which one I'm sure we'll get to in a few minutes. There's a reason why we chose to do what we did. There's a reason why when I realized it, then you have to have a conversation of, okay, something propelled this object forward. Mm-hmm. Now we got to have a conversation. And even if it is scientific, you're at least having the conversation of science and supernatural together. And I think that's a small win, even for a big skeptic.
Yeah, to try and figure out if there is something logical that's happening there. When you got that experience at King's Tower, where you had obviously those experiences in the past, and you got your validation there. Did you need the validation though? Once you got that EVP on tape, and you look back on it kind of retrospectively, had you already been in a mindset of, I accept this as being real, I know these things happened? Did personally truly validate much for you, or was it more just, yep, I know this stuff is real, you know, that is the definition of validation, but were you already pretty much convinced there that there's something going on?
I was, because it happened so many times for me. I just knew that it was there. I think it was more validation for the people around me, as in like the two people who were with me, it's like, see guys, I'm not crazy. But just getting their buy-in also, because once the two people with me at the time, what they experienced, it really just sold them also. And that put us on our journey for almost a decade. We created Smoke and Mirrors Paranormal, and I had an audio guy and a girl who was doing the historical side of it for me. And
sure,
after that location, it just really got their buy-in. And I think that's what I wanted, as I wanted somebody along with me on the journey, because I knew that this was real, but I just needed that validation. And I think going back to what I told you also, I wanted to be able to document clean evidence for people to listen to, is I wanted to show the world from just an individual standpoint that this stuff is real, and build that trust and respect in the field so people could come and see what we capture, click, listen, and move on, because I know people's attention spans are very short. That's why we made our stuff very easy to click, listen to, and then, you know, have your opinion on it and move on.
When you say clean evidence, obviously that is kind of a term that one could, if you're into the paranormal, go, wow, that's really clear and clean. And if you're not, you listen to it and you may go, I think that's very hard to understand. I mean, it's really a lot of times in the eye of the beholder. What do you mean by clean evidence? I mean, for some, no matter what you put in front of them, they could see the apparition and hear the voices and still be like, it's a dog, you know. But for others, you can convince them. So what do you define as clean evidence in as layman term as possible for someone who's listening, who is not an investigator and doesn't know what a class A or a class B anything is? Just how do you define it?
Right. So with audio specifically, you talk about class A, B, C, and that's how clean it is, how clear it is to hear. Is it, you know, how many words is it? Is it a full sentence? Is it just one word? So how we kind of gauge things is if, you know, we usually listen to raw audio with headphones. And if we can't hear it off the headphones, and because we don't want to doctor anything, yeah, besides maybe enhancing it a little louder, that's about as far as we would ever go. So if it's not raw and where you can hear it with your own ears, we usually don't put it up. There's a lot of things that you can listen to, and we think we understand what it's saying, and you definitely need to wear headphones to listen to this. So those things we kind of stay away from. If it's not just right in your face on the audio side,
yeah,
we're just going to kind of holster it and not put it out there for people to be, you know, because it, and again, we put subtitles so we can tell you what we think. But on the video side of it, you know, the light anomalies and all that stuff, we stay away from that stuff. I mean, there's definitely some validity to it, obviously. But unless it's like a door swinging or something literally in the video you see moving, we're not going to put it up there. But again, you are right. Everybody's going to have their skeptic side to them and say, well, you know, that floor could have been tilted, or he walked when that mat moved, so that could have affected it. So there's always going to be those pushbacks, which we're okay with. But we just don't want to have the evidence where they're like, hey, guys, watch this. This is crazy. And you watch a 2-minute video and you're like, what the hell am I looking at? You know, so sure, it's going to be something that's more in your face. And then again, on the audio, something that you can click and listen to. Like one example, we did a investigation in McRaven home, which Ghost Adventures just recently did when they did the Vicksburg episodes. And one of the best EVPs I've ever captured, it's got like a British accent to it. It says, that's a funny old clock. And such a really, really just, it's a full sentence. The room we captured it in has a big clock in it. So that's one of those things where you listen to it, you can show people, and they're like, wow, that's wild. You don't, you know, they don't have to interpret, what did she say again? You know, so whenever you can play an audio for 10, 15, 30 people and they get it the first time, that's what I mean when I say clean evidence, mm-hmm, that you don't have to, you know, try to interpret anything.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.